6, New Beginnings, and The Address of Happiness. So, as
I can't hear you.
You can't hear.
I can't hear you at all.
How about now?
I can. I don't know.
Okay. I think everybody else can hear me, Choquette.
Yes.
Oh.
You're fine.
Okay. I had a little speaker plugged in. Was it working? No,
it wasn't me. All right.
Selective.
All right.
Oh, my speaker broke then, or something. Carry on. Sorry about that.
Okay. It's happened. It's happened that I haven't been heard. So, all right. So, like I've done before, I wanted to take a few minutes and invite people to share passages from the book that struck them. Or I also want to invite if anybody read any parts and you just have questions, you just are like, what is this about? So let you look at your, and just go ahead and unmute yourself if you have something.
I have a quote that I've almost used as like a mantra this week or something, or said it over and over again to myself, but it's, and probably other people have done so too. So, but he says, I have arrived, I am home, I am not running anymore. I've run all my life. Now I am determined to stop and to really live my life.
Yes, and I would just add, I arrived, I'm at home, in the here, in the now. I am solid, I am free, in the ultimate I dwell. I use this quite a few times during my days, especially when I'm feeling rushed or something, and I find it very settling. And I like his I don't know where, but he goes through each line and talks about it in some detail in the book too. And I've enjoyed reading that for a second or third time.
Yeah, the whole thing is kind of like a meditation in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I. Found on page 110, I saw something that was, I thought, pretty timely, which is, imagine that you grew up as an untouchable. Imagine that everyone around you treated you badly and made you afraid for your life. Imagine that you had to please all those of higher rank in order to stay safe. How would you live? Would you be relaxed and in the present moment, or in constant worry about the future? The habit energy of anxiety would be very strong. And I thought that was very, very telling to help us have a bit more understanding of minorities, especially Black people in this country. Yeah, that's all.
Well, I found these chapters seem to be about living, not dying. Being mindful. So there was so much in it, I underlined so much, but one thing at the end was the Zen master Lin Chi said, the miracle is not to walk on water, but to walk on the earth. Mm. But there was so much in here.
So for me, and this I guess is consistent with Thich Nhat Hanh in general, is he has such a way of really kind of appreciating all the small things in life, and he sees the beauty in everything, it seems like, which I can't seem to do like he does. But I think that's, for me, what I always appreciate. It can be almost about anything that he writes about, but he just has that quality of presence and that quality of appreciation and that quality of kind of seeing that interconnectedness of things. So I don't have any specific quotes, but that's kind of what I get from a lot of his stuff. Thanks.
He loves to call everyone darling.
Yeah, he does that too.
I could only find an electronic copy free online, so I can't find a quote. Because I just discovered this earlier in the week that this was all going on, this book thing. But he talks about when he starts with the no one, there's no living, no dying, and then he talks a little bit like, I think he uses the term hereditary, like pain from previous lives going through people. And it made me think currently, like in Canada, the Indigenous communities, when they're talking about what they've gone through, often talk about trauma from their elders taking generations to pass through the people. So Indigenous children, who are five generations away from a grandparent that was in residential schools, still suffer from that trauma, and how it just lives through them. And he talks about that, and it seemed really poignant to what's going on in Canada with Indigenous people, and right now what's going on in the States. We have the Black community, young people who didn't face slavery but are still dealing with the trauma that has run through it. And it's that thing of, even though they didn't physically experience it, they have their family trauma running through them. And I thought that was really poignant and spoke to me right now.
Thank you. Anything else?
Well, I was just going to add very briefly that I used this week the poem that Walt brought up many, many times. And I hope I keep that practice up, because I find it almost instantly brings me into the present moment like nothing else. So I really enjoyed that.
Well, he talked about fear, and I have had a lot of fear in my life, and the big fear about death, there's that, but there's also all the little fears. And he talked about finding happiness, and we always say your problems or your fears, look right at them, face them, and that's then that's what you do, and then you find your happiness. I just thought that was really, that really resonated with me. So it seems, he makes it seem so simple.
It just strikes me that there's something so, I think his teaching and writing is really, what can you say? Accessible, inspiring, effective. But it also occurs to me that it's part of the power of what he's saying is based on who he is. That you know he's legit. I mean, I don't know. Like, just imagine if you had read this and I had written it. I mean, you'd be like, okay, yeah, that's cool. But like, it's we know through his example that, I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh was, witnessed, great suffering of his countrymen in South Vietnam during the Vietnam War. He helped afterwards. He helped boat people escape for quite a while. So I mean, he's not a lightweight, right? He's been around, and he embodies this. So when he says something like, which I'm going to bring up later, but that when I walk, I am always walking in the kingdom of God. Like, there's, I believe it, there's something very powerful about that. Any other comments or questions before I get into it?
Yeah, He was on Oprah. He was on Oprah. Oprah did a short interview with him. It's on YouTube for half an hour. And she says, "When do you meditate?" You know? And he says, and his response was, he never stops meditating. You know, he's always in meditation. And that struck me as really profound, you know. And he said it, well, you know, the way he talks and the way he is.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's the piece where, you know, when he does talk about the untouchables and the guy that he was working with and how that, you know, that anxiety and that trauma, you know, is built up and very difficult to work with. But he said the practice is the same, right? He was asking his untouchable friend to do the same practice. It's not easy, but it's the same practice, no matter how much fear or karma we have. So, as people have picked up, the gist of both of these chapters, I feel, were you can only be happy in the here and now, and happiness is always possible here and now. So, let's consider this. Do we believe this is true? No matter what the situation is in our personal life, no matter what the situation is in the world, happiness, true happiness, which, you know, the descriptions that he has of this, of you know, being in the here and now and being appreciative of small things, you know, you can tell that it's very sincere and real and profound. So you believe that is possible at any moment, no matter what's going on. Is it possible right now for you, for me, for all of us to feel that, given the craziness in the world? How can that be? Either the craziness in the world or our own dissatisfaction about ourselves. How can we be that happy? At one point he says, imagine that somebody took you in a jet plane to like heaven or the pure land or the kingdom of God or what however you want to describe, you know, this perfect world. You know, how would you walk on the ground there? How would you walk? How would you feel? And then he's implying that is possible at any given moment. That is possible. So, let's see, on page. He says, our true home is in the here and the now. The past is already gone. The future is not yet here. I have arrived. I am home, in the here, in the now. This is our practice. You can recite this gatha or poem during walking meditation or sitting meditation. You can practice this poem when you drive to your office. You may not have arrived at your office, but even while driving, you have already arrived at your true home, the present moment. When you arrive at your office, this is also your true home. When you are in your office, you are also in the here and now. Just practicing the first line of this poem, I have arrived, I am home, can make you very happy. Whether you are sitting, whether you are walking, whether you're watering the vegetables in the garden, or whether you are feeding your child, it is always possible to practice, I have arrived, I am home. I am not running anymore, I have run all my life. Now I am determined to stop and really live my life. So, I don't imagine I have to clarify this for most of you, but it's worth pointing out that this practice of here and now does not shut anything out. So there is, we can practice that way, that we can use mindfulness as a spiritual bypass, in a sense. You know, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, or our family's in great distress. But if we have enough concentration, we can just follow our breath and let go, and like right here and now is relatively peaceful, right? So we can just kind of ignore what's going on out there. We can turn off the news, not expose ourselves, and just enjoy our little bubble, assuming our little bubble is comfortable and peaceful. But that's not this kind what Thich Nhat Hanh is talking about. I would imagine you would all agree with me there that this kind of here and now it's not excluding anything. So he talks about also how, let's see, if you can breathe in and out and walk in the spirit of I have arrived, I am home, in the here, in the now, then you will notice that you are becoming more solid and more free immediately. You have established yourself in the present moment at your true address. Nothing can push you to run anymore or make you so afraid. You are free from worrying about the past. You are not stuck thinking about what has not happened yet and what you cannot control. You are free from guilt concerning the past, and you are free from your worries about the future. Only a free person can be a happy person. The amount of happiness that you have depends on the amount of freedom that you have in your heart. Freedom here is not political freedom. Freedom here is freedom from regret, freedom from fear, freedom from anxiety and sorrow. I have arrived. I am home, in the here, in the now. So let me throw out a question. How would being free from sorrow be a bodhisattva act at this time? As bodhisattvas, we are recognize we're in it with all beings, and so we feel compassion for other beings suffering. We take a vow to free all beings along with ourselves.
So, say the question again.
So how would being free from sorrow, so he's saying if we do this in the moment, in the here and now practice, we can be free from regret and fear, anxiety and sorrow. So how is that good? How is that, other than good for us, how is that good as a bodhisattva? Ruth Ann, did you want to say something?
Yes. Sorrow can be the price we pay watching the news, but that doesn't mean we have to linger with it. We can recognize when it settles in us, or as the Dalai Lama said, yes, of course I have these emotions, but I don't stay with them. And so we can recognize it in ourselves and then see a wider picture of where we might take an action, one being that we don't let it destroy the next moments of our life and to other things we might do, even an action of some kind of comfort or encouragement.
Well, when I think of this in terms of the Bodhisattva vows, I almost have this this sort of airline image where, you know, they go through the demonstration of putting the oxygen mask on yourself first before you turn and help your child. That's kind of what I'm thinking about. I mean, on a superficial level, it's great that in this moment I am free from sorrow. But he also talks in here somewhere, and I can't find it, where the best teachers teach, or when you teach, or when you present, you do this from your own experience. So if I truly have that experience in this moment of being free from sorrow, it just makes the path that much easier for me to try and help the next person and to show them the way to free themselves from sorrow. That's my thinking of your question.
I think
that it's like almost, if you're not careful, it's almost selfish. Where if you spend too much time stuck in sorrow, you're just worrying about yourself and you can't do the things to help the rest of the people, or that sort of what might be going along that line. I think of it maybe as just a little bit too me-centered when we get stuck in sorrow.
Yeah, I agree with Tyler. That's about what I would say. Sorrow is really looking at the effect upon oneself, but compassion is the one looking upon the effect on others, and to leave sorrow behind and focus on compassion, I think definitely is a message and a positive energy, as opposed to being sorrowful and sort of focusing on the effect on you.
I was just wondering, when it's someone very close to you who's suffering, how it's even possible to be free from sorrow. I mean, there are times it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it occurs to me that almost any of these things that we talk about, whether it's mindfulness or freedom from sorrow or whatever, that it's easy for us to start to think in dualistic terms, like it's either or. Like, either you succumb to sorrow or you're free from sorrow. Where it's like, this is a moment-to-moment practice, you know? And I just did two podcast episodes on grief, which is like, grief is love in the face of loss, you know? So when it is love when we, or, you know, compassion is, can be, have sorrow in it when we see other beings suffering. So that's gotta be like natural and okay. Right. But I think there's you kind of think maybe the terms like freedom from, like, if we are captive to it, if we are, you know, kind of lost in it or stuck in it or driven by it, perhaps, then we're not, then we don't have that freedom, you know, that we may feel it, but we have some freedom within it or around it, perhaps. I know that from go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's possible to move in and out of it to feel the sorrow and then
I know that for myself, I you know, sorrow on behalf of the world because of all kinds of things. when I was growing up and a young adult, and I just carried it around with me and felt like I couldn't really, I couldn't really appreciate my life because of all this horrible stuff that was going on. And I remember at one point, just in practice, just, I was just walking down the street and I just thought, what if I set aside that sorrow? What if, you know, just as I walk here, I just let it go. And it was just such an interesting realization that to some extent, that was extra. That my love was still there, my intention to help was still there, but the sorrow was bogging me down and depressing me and paralyzing me even. I wasn't doing anything. I was feeling a lot of sorrow, but I wasn't actually doing anything. Whereas when I released that sorrow, it's like this, I'm not helping anybody by holding on to this. So I'm guessing that's the kind of lightness that
I really like that. I think it reminds me a little bit of like anger in a sense too, that it's almost like a honeypot. There's kind of some enticing quality to it where you just go back there. And I was thinking before you spoke that it's also tied in, I think sometimes there's different forms of sorrow. And one of them that I find myself indulging in, which I don't think is very productive, is regret, which might be related to grief as well. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of grief as well. So, I could go off on that, but I think there's, it can also be a motivator for action, just like anger can be a motivator for action. And I think to the extent that we feel that emotion and then move to some other place, maybe that's the Buddhist way. Maybe that's the Zen way. I don't know for sure, but that's the way I've been thinking about it right now. So.
Well, I, what I'm just feeling physically when I hear you talk, Domio, about releasing that sorrow, is definitely a release and a letting go. But I also sort of imagine myself stepping from the past into the present at that moment. And as Franklin has said, there's an allure to the past. I mean, I'm comfortable feeling regret. I get that. You know, I get there's an expression in my other community, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Not true. I want to shut the door and lock it and throw away the key. So I totally get that. But I need the energy, or somehow you have to summon the energy to take that step completely away from that, at least, and hang on to that at least for a little while.
Yeah. So Thich Nhat Hanh says, and this is the passage that struck me the most, was wherever the practitioner goes, she knows she is touching the kingdom of God under her feet. There is not one day when I do not walk in the kingdom of God. Earlier he said kingdom of God, or the pure land of Buddha, or the ultimate, however you want to phrase it. Because I practice freedom and compassion wherever I go, my feet touch the kingdom of God, the ultimate dimension, everywhere. If we cultivate this kind of touching, then the important elements of solidity and freedom will be available to us 24 hours every day. I kind of believe that he says it, there is not one day when I do not walk in the kingdom of God. I think I don't know about you all, but I think there's always a curiosity about somebody who's a so-called Zen teacher. I wonder, do you walk in the kingdom of God all day, every day? And I would have to say, you know, no, that I don't. I had to go mail a package this afternoon, and the guy in front of me had like 12 individual packages. He was mailing to 12 individual places. And as I said, you know, I was not in the kingdom of God at the moment. But I don't think, again, I don't think this is a dualistic thing. It's like either somebody is always in the kingdom of God or you never are. It's, you know, it's a matter of degree. It's a matter of familiarity. And, you know, I remember being in college before I got into Zen, and just the bleakness and misery that I felt about my life and life in general was just very pervasive. It wasn't an acute depression. My life wasn't awful, but it definitely didn't feel like the kingdom of God. It felt like, really? This? Is this what's going to go on for the next how many decades? This? And, you know, it wasn't easy getting familiar with the kingdom of God. It wasn't easy getting familiar with this here and now that can be so so restorative, that is so sweet and free from fear and sorrow. But so I may not be walking around in it all the time, but I have great faith in it, and I have great faith in the practice, and that I can return to that at any moment, or most moments. So, have you met people? I mean, I think like Thich Nhat Hanh and Dalai Lama spring to mind. People that you do feel like are really present and alive and appreciative in a way that you admire, in a way that makes them remarkable. And what is that? And is that way of being, you know, considering that in the context of all the misery that's and stress that's happening right now, does that kind of person seem to be looking after their own happiness and excluding all of that? I was figuring that I would put you into breakout rooms so everybody would have to talk. It's kind of hard in a big group to all like jump in. So for a few moments, let's reflect on this, on what do you think of this way of being? Is it real? So I wanted to, I don't know, I've never done anything like this before. Close with a meditation, some guided meditation. So you go ahead and center yourself, make yourself comfortable and somewhat upright. So do what you can to feel completely and utterly at ease. Imagine I know I have the perspective and authority, and I can assure you that it is completely okay to be completely at ease at this moment. Imagine being utterly happy. Everything that you are concerned about has been resolved. All of the shortcomings in yourself and in your life are okay. You know it's good enough, and not just good enough, but worthy of love, worthy of honor. What would complete ease and happiness feel like? If you can, notice where you feel some resistance, maybe in your chest, or maybe your brow is furrowed a little bit, or your stomach is tensed up a little bit. So say, not that. I can't be completely happy. This can't be the kingdom of God because. Because of my own shortcomings. I'm not mindful enough or disciplined enough or compassionate enough. Hardworking enough. Now imagine Thich Nhat Hanh, imagine the Dalai Lama, imagine a loving mother or friend assures you none of that matters. It's totally okay. All of those issues are out there in time and space, past and future, out through space. That is the realm of causation. Here and now has no dimension at all. Here and now is your breath. Here and now is your body. Here and now is the sound of the breeze. The warmth of your own body. Sounds registering on your ear. Here now, this moment is totally complete. Right here and now, there is nothing wrong. Nothing. If there's any resistance to releasing our baggage, releasing what we're running after, it's not because of external circumstances. It's our choice. We're holding on to those things, and we don't have to. This is the truth. This is the teaching. We think we have to hold on to the suffering, to the sorrow, to the fear, to the anxiety because of external circumstances. And all of those things are relevant in time and space. But here and now has no dimension. Here and now, we don't have to hold on to any of those things. It takes trust to let go. We have to trust, we have to try it and see that we remain okay. That it doesn't make things worse. It makes things better. It gives us strength. It rejuvenates us. Gives us hope. At any moment throughout our day, any moment we can take refuge in the here and now. In which everything is just as it is. Everything is okay. Everything is miraculous. As Thich Nhat Hanh said, we have two working eyes with which to read. We have a lung that can take in air. We have air to breathe. We can breathe. There's so much to be grateful for. All of the things in time and space that we are concerned about, they're all still there. And as bodhisattvas, we respond. But as we respond, we have a secret weapon. And that's this here and now. They exist simultaneously, the perfection of here and now, the completeness, and everything else. The here and now is not a denial. Is our source of joy and peace. Thank you all. Hope I didn't put you to sleep, Matt.
Never, never.
I'm going to set the stage.
Well, thank you all for being here, being part of our online Sangha.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good rest of your evening and good luck out there.
Yep. Good night, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Bye, next time.
Good night.